Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
Getting called out in the middle of the night to go carve a cow, to do a cesarean.
It's the closest thing to farming you can do in the middle of Bristol.
And then mum put on YouTube and then now it's there for the world to see, so it's great.
England were very chirpy.
And I think I only cried like 4 times, but they just happened to get all 4 times on camera, okay?
Locked myself in a procedure room.
Whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
I love people and I love cricket.
Suddenly I'm out on a helicopter because I can go on a glacier.
It's been the longest year ever, hasn't it?
My dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
So I learned the anthem because I really genuinely thought they would make us sing it.
Polly, you often start by saying it's been a big week for women's cricket, but this has been a monster week for women's cricket.
This could be the biggest week in cricket that we've been podcasting for. I think the only thing that might come close is Ashes series, but this feels very, very significant.
So loads and loads and loads of stuff going on. What's the first thing we're going to talk about?
I think let's start with the smaller things to get out of the way. In fact, actually, what we're going to talk about is quite big, but in the context of everything, it's quite small. We're going to chat about Shamari Attapattu, because what she's done over the last, well, years and years, but particularly the last 24 hours and the last series is absolutely remarkable.
And what's going on in Sri Lankan cricket overall as well? Because they've beaten England in England. They've beaten South Africa in South Africa. And I suppose when they beat England, they won the T20 series, but we beat them quite convincingly in the ODI series. Here, they've won the T20 series and have pulled off a heist, nothing like we've seen before in the ODI series, to win a game in which they were set 301? It was 300, wasn't it? It was 299 that South Africa got. And what's been totally overlooked is Laura Woolvar hit 184 not out in a losing cause. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, how often does that happen? There were world records and all sorts happening the other day. So just incredible from Sri Lankan cricket. And could they lift the World Cup? Honestly, it probably wouldn't shock me at this point because they've been absolutely incredible. And yeah, I mean, we saw with the under-19s, they've got a lot of talent coming through. So I really don't think there's anything to worry about when it comes to Sri Lankan cricket and the future of it, really.
To be honest with you, when they beat England, I kind of wrote it off, you know, well, we were resting some players and it was the end of the season and we'd had the Ashes and all that sort of thing. So I sort of wrote it off as a one-off, but actually they keep doing it. And they are major players. They're becoming major players in the global game. They could win the World Cup. You heard it here first.
Exclusive on the North Shore podcast. Now, this episode was going to be a season preview, but as we kind of predicted, all the Project Darwin news came out this week. And so we feel like we need to do a little bit of a deep dive because there's a lot to get into. So for those that don't know, Project Darwin is the restructuring of the women's domestic systems. So there are going to be 3 tiers. And the first tier, which is the top professional level, has been decided. So counties could put a bid in and they had to provide what they're going to do and why they should take that professional team. Now, as far as we're aware, it was not done based on regions. So in theory, there could be 4 teams in like the southeast of England, but realistically that was never going to be the case. And what's ended up happening is it basically is one per region as the regions exist at the moment, so one in the northeast, one in the northwest, etc. So I thought we would go through each team and kind of have a look at how much of a surprise it is. Now, it's kind of frustrating because the ECB nor the counties have kind of released their bids, and I doubt they will do. Those that have been successful probably won't, because then the public might hold them accountable to it. And those that haven't been successful, it might be quite obvious where they've failed and things like that. So start off, I want to have a quick look at Somerset because I think that's quite an interesting one. Now, we were thinking Glamorgan potentially could get it, but Glamorgan have been promised in the expansion in 2027, they've been promised a pro side, but Somerset have been successful. My first question to you is, what is the future of Gloucestershire?
Yes. What's come out, what surprised me about the announcement that's been made is that actually it's not one announcement. It's actually three announcements that have been made to represent three stages of development over the next, well, 5 years, but 4 years within the life of this project, which kicks off in a year's time. And so these eight counties are only the first step in that process. And the 2 years down the line, you're going to have Yorkshire and Glamorgan join it. And then 2 years after that, there'll be two more. So there'll be 12 professional counties by the end of this decade. And that's having started this decade with no professionalism outside of the central contracts. So that's quite rapid growth. But within that, you see there's an evolution, a development. I guess that's where the project is its name from, isn't it? So there's a development going over that time. Somerset have been chosen. And I guess Somerset must have put together a very good bid. But also, you sense there's some politics involved in this. People in the Southwest were very unhappy about the 100 franchise going to South Wales and feeling that left out. And so here you've got Somerset and Glamorgan 2 years down the line being chosen to be part of this project. And Gloucestershire, Bristol missing out on it. And you wonder whether they may be number 11 or 12 a bit further down the line, because that seems to be, that's a big centre of women's cricket historically. Hove is another big centre of women's cricket historically. Sussex have missed out as well. So you wonder whether those might be places that end up with something eventually by the end of this decade. But yeah, it's really interesting that Somerset get it over Gloucestershire, and really interesting that Glamorgan have got it coming down the line. And of course, the funding for Glamorgan and for Yorkshire will be there to develop a Tier 1 academy pathway over the next couple of years to develop the next generation of professionals as they're coming through.
Yeah, we'll get on to some of the other counties in a minute. I think one thing to kind of caveat the entire conversation, and it is quite obvious, is some counties were always going to miss out. You know, some really significant counties weren't going to get a Tier 1 team because there are only eight Tier 1 teams from 2025. And so that was always going to happen. particularly, I think about Kent, Surrey, Sussex, they're all quite close together, and Hampshire, they're all quite close together, and realistically it was only ever going to be two of them, and that's been the case. And I think it's the same in the Southwest, that there are quite a few significant counties and yeah, some were always going to miss out, so it's just the way it is. And yeah, and I think it's also important to remember that Project Darwin isn't just Tier 1, there is Tier 2 and Tier 3 with the aim of making more of those teams professional. And we've seen, obviously, with Yorkshire and Glamorgan being promised them in 2027, there is that route to a professional side. Now, I think let's move on to Durham, because that's the big one. Now, we spoke a couple of weeks ago about Durham having a really strong bid. Now, of course, we don't know their entire plans and we didn't see that. I think a big part of their argument being put forward is that they would host all the games at Chesley Street, so the women would have access to a very, very good ground to play their games. Now, of course, Yorkshire's a massive place and people are not happy about them not having a Tier 1 side. But, I mean, I'm going to be honest, all I say to that is, well, Durham's bid must have been better. And I think there is a big argument, and I get where it comes from, that this is a punishment for Yorkshire, the ECB are punishing them. Honestly, I could be naive, but I don't think that's the case, because actually the panel of people who decided this, a lot of them do not come from cricket backgrounds. A lot of them are not involved in cricket. They're involved in other sports and things like that. And I also think if the ECB did do that and they looked at Durham and Yorkshire and thought, actually, Yorkshire's bid's better, but out of spite, we're going to give it to Durham, they're shooting themselves in the foot because they're trying to restructure the entirety of women's cricket, which is something they've done multiple times. This time they want to get it right. Why would they do something that could potentially sabotage the success of it just to punish Yorkshire? I don't quite get that.
No, and I think this can be part of Yorkshire's rehabilitation, really. There have been all sorts of problems there, which are very, very well documented, mainly through the men's team. So we don't need to go into that. But this can be part of that rehabilitation. The press release that Yorkshire put out was quite bitter, I thought, and gave the impression that Yorkshire were saying that essentially they currently have the franchise and it's been taken away from them, and they don't. That Northern Diamonds is not Yorkshire. It never has been Yorkshire. It's Yorkshire, Durham and Northumberland. And so it's not been taken away from Yorkshire. They didn't have it in the first place. They were, an equal partner amongst 18 people who were bidding for 8 places. Most people are going to go away disappointed. And I think given everything that's happened in Yorkshire over the last few years, you know, I think it's quite good that they've got it coming to them in 2 years' time. They've got a chance to grow something. You know, there's a huge tradition of cricket in Yorkshire. And I think, you know, it will be women's cricket needs a strong Yorkshire presence. I completely agree. And, you know, we think about the players that we really admire, we've had in the on the podcast, like Katie Levick, real great professionals of the game, like Holly Armitage, you know, who are from Yorkshire. Those people are the backbone of the women's game, and we definitely want them. But they don't actually have to play in Leeds to be great players. You know, they can play in Chesterley Street, or they can play for any other county that they want. And many great Yorkshire players have played for other counties over the years in the men's game.
I think it's a really interesting one because also from the statement, it, as you say, it did feel bitter. And I think a lot of the wording, I thought, I don't necessarily want to use the word entitled, but it did feel a little bit that way. I think the way they said they were surprised they didn't get a county. So are you surprised that you know, Durham put together an incredible bid? Because you know what? I think they probably were. They probably weren't expecting it. And I think the other thing I didn't like, and I found it a little bit funny, because there is a serious side to it, the sense that players potentially have to pick up their lives and move somewhere else. But also that happens quite a lot in professional sport. That happens in quite a lot of other sports because your contract ends and you go somewhere else. It's something that happens. And, you know, personally, I don't think having to move to Durham is the end of the world. But, you know, maybe for some people, they don't want to do that. But the way they phrased it seemed like every single player in that Northern Diamonds team is a Yorkshire player. And that is really not the case. They've got players from North East Warriors, which is Durham and Northumberland put together. They aren't, and as you said, you know, Yorkshire don't own the franchise of Northern Diamonds. Yes, they once were the Yorkshire Diamonds, but they've been the Northern Diamonds since 2020. And I just found that entire thing quite interesting. And as you say, I think they also can't be too upset because they've been given a professional team for 2027. And actually, that's not that far away. It's also, Yorkshire hasn't ceased to exist. They're still a side. It will probably, I imagine it's a tier two side now. And so, yes, I can understand why they're disappointed. But at the same time, you have to put the best bid possible forward if you want this. You can't be complacent. You can't rely on the fact that you're a big name in cricket or whatever. You've got to prove to the Dragons as such that you're worthy of it. And yeah, I'm really pleased for Durham because I thought the video they did was absolutely amazing, and the reaction to Durham getting it from people in Durham and the Northeast has been absolutely fantastic. And something we spoke about earlier was actually there's not Other than, so Newcastle women's football team, they are professional and they've been professional since January 2023. But other than that, I don't think there is any professional women's sports team in the Northeast. So to have a professional women's cricket team is absolutely amazing. To have that pathway there, I think is brilliant. And yes, Yorkshire have missed out, but it really isn't for that long. And I really don't think it's a detrimental issue for them.
It's great news for the Northeast, and there's such a love of sport and sporting tradition there. So I think it's absolutely brilliant, you know. And in fact, if say this quietly, if I were Amy Campbell, I'd be heading there straight away. I'd be wanting to go back to my roots.
To be fair, I think it was really nice actually to see the video they put together. Obviously, like Ben Stokes was in it and stuff, but Paul Collingwood and his daughter, who's in the pathway there, and I just think there are so many iconic players from the Northeast, particularly in the men's game actually. But I would love to see that in the women's game and them come through and play for England and stuff. You know, too many Southerners. You know, we need some Northeast in there.
absolutely. I think it's addressing actually a historical wrong within the game and an imbalance within the game that so many players, you know, come from the Southeast, you know, privately educated, middle-class backgrounds. And this is really, really important. And then to actually have a team in Durham and to have a team eventually in Leeds as well, I think is going to be great.
Definitely. We move on to Surrey. Now, for me, this wasn't a massive surprise. Obviously, their competition was Kent, in theory. As we say, it's not necessarily determined by region. But the big problem with Kent is that they were fundraising. And if I'm going to be honest, if you are trying to prove yourself as a professional women's team, saying, oh, we're going to try and get donors in and stuff like that, that it's not a great look, to be honest, is it?
You'd never find Surrey crowdfunding, I tell you that.
To be fair, they could probably crowdfund a lot of money. I'd be very interested to see the average income of a Surrey member. Surrey have got it, and it's very well deserved. I think the thing that's quite interesting about Kent and the argument with Kent is, oh, they've got a massive history. Look at the players they've produced. But for me, it's really not about history. And this is why I think Durham is a fantastic example. They're not saying, look at this player we've got, look at this player. They're like, look what we can produce. Look what we can do in the future. And I think that is really important, because if you've got history, actually, you might not really have much association with that now. You might not have that much connection with it now. But saying, we're going to put this in place for, you know, the future of women's cricket, I think that, to me, speaks volumes, instead of just relying on something that happened 30 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, and again, the caveat is we don't really know the ins and outs of what was in the bids. And I'm aware there'll be lots of people listening to us who might feel quite hurt about what happened this week. And that's inevitable part of a process like this, isn't it? That, you know, there are going to be people who feel that it's very unjust and feel left behind and left out and cut out of the whole process. And actually asking the question, well, who can I support now? And I guess I feel, as a follower of the game, I feel like I'm standing outside of that a little bit. In that I don't feel I have a huge affiliation to one county that I'm a member of. I just feel like I really love the game. And that's not a way, definitely not saying that people who are members of counties don't love the game, but I don't have a strong feeling for one particular area. So I don't have that feeling of loss and letdown and that sort of thing. And I guess my only thought about that is that for teams that missed out, is that to just try and be the best tier two county you can possibly be, is the best way of becoming a tier one county, and put all that work into developing it. And the knowledge, actually, there will be loads of counties out there who will work really, really hard to develop players who will never play for them because professionalism will lie somewhere else for them. But again, that's always existed. That's always existed in what were known as the minor counties. Davina Perrin is from Staffordshire. So her future does not lie as a Staffordshire player. She's not going to play tier three with Staffs. She's almost certainly going to play tier one with Warwickshire. And that's just the way things are. And I suppose Staffs, because of their history, will accept that that's what happens to their best players. And I guess this is what's going to happen in the women's game as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. And I think particularly with Yorkshire, I do really feel for Yorkshire fans, because actually this is something that's completely not in their control. And of course, yes, they can go watch Yorkshire women as a tier two side, but, you know, they won't have the best players in the world there and things like that. You'd imagine Holly Armitage and Lauren Winfield Hill won't be playing for them and things like that. So I do very much have empathy from that sense. But I guess, yeah, it was always going to happen. And I think it needs to happen. I think we look 5-10 years down the line, and I think we won't be thinking about this. I hope we'll be think, wow, it's been a success, because there'll be a lot more professionalism. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a very strange situation to be in, because I guess you've gone from county cricket to regional, trying to find these regional identities where actually you've got rivals playing on the same team, and then splitting it all up again. So it's a little bit of a strange one. We need to get through the other counties, but Hampshire, I think that, again, to me, I think Sussex are quite unlucky to miss out, but Vipers have been based in Hampshire for the last 4 years, and even before then with the Kia Super League and things. So not a huge surprise, but I mean, Sussex, I would be interested to see what their bid look like, because they do, again, they've got a history of women's cricket, but also they do have quite a strong current setup there.
Yeah, and they've got Bede School as well, which is a big feeder into women's professional cricket as well. So I'd imagine that would have featured very much in their bid. Yeah, so it's, you mentioned Georgia Adams, very much part of Sussex. You know, her father played for Sussex. She grew up there. Really, yeah, she's not going to play for Sussex ever. She's going to play for Hampshire, where Southern Vipers did incorporate Sussex. This is good. Now it's a bit different.
Yeah, and on to Essex. Now, I'm quite excited about Essex because they've had a kind of a strong identity with women's cricket for a while, produced a lot of good players. But actually, I was looking at their bid and what they've actually said today, and also when they submitted the bid. And actually, they've got the FA Women's High Performance Centre, and they're home to Essex Rebels basketball and volleyball teams, and they've partnered with Essex University. So I was looking at some of the stuff, and it seemed to do with like sports science and things like that. So I thought that side was quite fascinating. But it seems that they've also worked with some of those smaller counties. So I think Cambridgeshire, maybe Huntington, I can't even say the county. Yeah, that one, the tiny, tiny one that's kind of irrelevant. They've partnered with some of those smaller counties to make, I don't think they could have included it in the bid because you can't do like joint bids, but you know, they're not going solo. They are encompassing that wider region, with, I guess, the hope that some of those players would feed into the Essex pathway.
Yeah, and I guess Chelmsford is a very historical place for women's cricket, isn't it? That England played a lot of games there over the years. So Essex, it feels like a good fit, I would say. And for that sort of north of the Thames franchise of those counties. I wondered actually for a while whether Northants might be in with a shout for it. But Essex seems to fit well there, I think. It'll be really interesting as well, you know, teaming up with the university there. Maybe Essex is the new Loughborough. Who knows?
Wow, what a statement. Do you know what? I don't say many nice things about Essex, but I reckon there's a lot more going on than in Loughborough. I think I'd way rather spend a couple of years in Essex than at Loughborough.
Really? I almost went to Essex. back in 1989. Yeah. It was top of my UCAS form. And then I went to visit the place and spent a miserable night in a pub in Wivenhoe. Going to the open day and thought, actually, I don't really want to spend the next 4 years here.
Well, we spent a miserable night in Colchester a couple of years ago, didn't we?
I enjoyed that.
There was a graveyard right next to the place we had tea, which is interesting. Interesting place, Colchester. But, you know, what can I say? I'm from Birmingham. So moving on to Birmingham, that was a beautiful segue. Warwickshire. Now, this was kind of inevitable again, similar to like Lancashire and Nottingham. The interesting thing I'll say about Warwickshire, which is just such a bad look, is that Warwickshire women, the existing team, are playing Worcestershire women at Edgbaston on Sunday, and there's been no promotion of it because it is behind closed doors. Now, in what world do you put a game at Edgbaston and put it behind closed doors?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's awful. It's horrific because Worcestershire published their fixtures a couple of days ago. Now, the fixtures have been available for a while, but they actually published them with the venues. And the first one was Edgbaston. And I initially thought, oh, is that Edgbaston Foundation Ground? And someone on Twitter had like added Warwickshire to say, oh, how can we get tickets for this game? And the admin replied, it's behind closed doors. And I was absolutely horrified. I was, what is the point?
Like, okay,
you may as well play at Moseley Cricket Club. If you're going to put it behind closed doors, why would you have such a big venue? Like, make
you bears, get in touch with us and let us know why a Warwickshire women's game is happening at Edgbaston behind closed doors. I'm intrigued. I'm interested as well with Warwickshire because they're not blessed with loads of outgrounds. So rugby school is being used by the men's team a couple of times this season, it's a long way from Edgbaston. it's a good 30, 40 miles from Edgbaston. But there aren't a whole load of outgrounds. Of course, there's the Foundation Ground. That's not the sort of venue you're going to use for a well-attended professional game. But the sort of level below Edgbaston, the sort of smaller ground, actually New Road Worcester, that sort of size ground just doesn't really exist within the county. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that.
Yeah, because I guess when it sparks, they have a little bit more flexibility in terms of like Kidderminster's being used. Mm-hmm. But obviously when it's Warwickshire, they can't really do that. And the clubs within, like the cricket clubs within that region, they've used Moseley, which personally, having been there to do commentary, I don't think it's up to scratch. I don't think it's able to facilitate what a professional side would need. Again, that's a point moving forward, because whether the team will actually be able to play all their games at Edgbaston, I doubt it. I think some of that will be logistics. I don't know, with the schedule clashing with the men. Not that the men should necessarily take priority over the women, but that's the way life works, unfortunately. There are a couple of talking points with Warwickshire. Nottingham and Lancashire feel quite similar. For me, Nottingham were always going to get it. I think given the Blaze rebrand and everything, it would, I don't know how much they knew about this when they did the rebrand, but I don't think Leicestershire were ever going to get it. But I think in some ways they can feel it, not snubbed, but I think they can feel a bit disappointed.
Well, they put out a disappointed statement as well, didn't they? The thing that strikes me about Notts is that there was this big hoo-ha about the Blaze moving to Nottingham, and they played one game at Trent Bridge last year, and the rest was all at outgrounds, including at Derby and Leicester, as well as another place we won't mention. But so I don't think Nottingham were a shoo-in particularly, but they ended up with it anyway. And I think Leicester, they thought they might have been in with a really good chance, but clearly not. Lancashire. I mean, are the champions of the women's game, really, aren't they? You know, and I'd say, as a Lancastrian, I'd say to Yorkshire, you know, where's your floodlight tribute to a woman's player?
That is so true.
How's your changing room decor looking? Lancashire are, and also, they're developing an outground in Preston as well, aren't they? So that's, you know, they're ahead of the game, really.
Yeah, well, we don't hate Yorkshire, but we don't really like them either. So we will caveat this entire conversation with that. We do love
Lancashire. We probably like them more than we like Vipers.
That's true, because no one likes Vipers. You're not allowed to like that. I don't dislike Northern Diamonds. I actually quite like them. I just don't like Yorkshire. Yeah. But I think that's the little bit of Lancastrian in me that I'm like, no thanks. But no, Lancashire were always going to get it. I mean, love you, Cheshire and Cumbria, but just wasn't going to happen, was it? Playing in the Peak District even? Oh, the Lake District. It's been a long day. So Lancashire, we speak about Nottingham and how they've done this whole thing and then they never play at Trent Bridge. Actions speak a lot louder than words. And Lancashire, I mean, a great example actually of Lancashire is they were supposed to play a game on Wednesday at Sale, and because of they think they're more likely to get the game to happen at Lancashire, they're moving it to Old Trafford. So I think that's fantastic.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and because not many teams would do that.
They've got really decent outgrounds at Southport and Blackpool as well.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously you said with this new facility in Preston, and that's been in the works for a couple of years now even. So it's absolutely brilliant. So very, very excited. Now, the one last thing I want to quickly touch on is Tier 2. Now, hopefully we get some more information about Tier 2 soon. But I think it's quite an interesting one because as much as some counties will be disappointed to miss out on Tier 1 status, I reckon because of the way the system works at the moment, some of the players for those counties won't actually be too upset about that because say you're currently a player for Durham, for example. I think Durham's quite a decent example. Or Somerset, where actually the team it's mainly young players or it's players who are in their late 20s or so who haven't been able to take that step up to a full-time contract at a region but regularly play senior county cricket. Well, if your side is promoted to Tier 1, you're not going to play for that team realistically because you're going to be competing with people that have been professional cricketers for a number of years and you've never played professional cricket. So actually, if you are a Sussex player, for example, that's actually not a bad result for you because you can continue playing county cricket and you won't be kind of shoved out the side as such.
And it'll be a much better level of county cricket and it'll be better supported. And, you know, it's the opportunity for those counties to put some investment and money into their women's side and to actually maybe do pay some players, maybe education contracts, maybe part-time contracts, in order to attract some of the best players and make them the best possible side they can be, as well as all the development and youth cricket and so on that will go alongside that.
So we have got a couple of questions from Twitter, which for once I've actually remembered to read out. So I'll try and get through them quickly. So Jamie asks, could you explain what's likely to happen with Tier 3 and 2? 3 and 2? I read that the wrong way around, 2 and 3. Now, yeah, as we say, we don't have tons of information on it, but I think they might have to bid again for a Tier 2. I could be wrong. And I presume Yorkshire and Glamorgan have been given Tier 2 sides, given the fact they're going to move to a fully professional setup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly the case, isn't it? I mean, it'll be interesting to see who gets Tier 2 and who gets Tier 3, because if there are 18 men's counties out there, and there are 8 who've got Tier 1, that means there are 10 who haven't. So if there are another 8 in Tier 2, it means that 2 of them will be in Tier 3 alongside Huntingdonshire, as you mentioned before, and so on. So there will be a process for that, I'm sure. And winners and losers.
Yeah, the next question, which is quite easy to answer, I think, is what impact will this have on the women's test match being hosted at Headingley on the next Ashes tour? Personally, I don't think it will have an impact. If anything, I think it's a really good opportunity for Yorkshire to put on a show. And show what they can do. Obviously, I know that ECB will market it, but actually, if Yorkshire can, if they do some promotion themselves and get, I guess it's a big opportunity for them to get their team on the map. Yeah, I don't think it will really have that much impact.
Yeah, I mean,
it's an opportunity.
Yeah, Middlesex are not a chosen tier one county, and I'm sure Lords will be used as well.
Precisely. This is a good point, actually. So Kev says, surely some staff have contracts with current regions that continue beyond 2025. Would they be expected to see that out before moving? Argument's sake for someone from the Diamonds. Now, this is a good example because I think Lauren Winfield Hill has a 3-year deal with the Diamonds, which started in 2022, I think, which would obviously go past the cutoff. Honestly, I don't quite know. I think they're contracted to the ECB. So in terms of the contract, I don't entirely know. I don't know anything legal.
From what I can tell, these are new entities. So effectively, if you are a Central Sparks player or a Northern Diamonds player or whoever, your job will come to an end at the end of this season. And now what happens then? Is it an open market? Is it a draft? Is there a transfer system? Everyone's a free agent. You get your agent to negotiate and find yourself the best deal from a county. I just don't know quite how that will work. That is a detail that other people will be working out as we speak. Top men.
We've got one more question, and this is quite an interesting one, to be fair. It says, how many of the existing region's identity do you think will be retained, e.g. Somerset Storm, Essex Sunrisers, and how many will take on the names and colours of the men's county sides? Now, personally, I don't know, but I think, and what I would imagine, given the whole point of Project Darwin, was that it'll be exactly the same as the men. So it'll be Essex women, it'll be Durham women. They will wear the same kits, the same colours, things like that. And if that doesn't happen, I think I'll be a little bit disappointed because it feels like it's missing the point. So for example, if Surrey go back to Surrey Stars, for me, that feels like a missed opportunity because call them Surrey women, because people will know exactly what they are then, rather than they're like Stars, but what is this, like, an academy side? Is this it? Or like Somerset Storm, people aren't necessarily going to know the Storm, because I think that's one of the issues with the regions, the identity, and that's one of the reasons for Project Darwin. So
I'm no expert in marketing and branding, but I think this is really, really important that there's, and you know, Polly, you do a lot of work in women's football, and actually the club identity is really important. And for women's football clubs that don't have an identity alongside a men's club, like London City Lionesses and so on, they're on the way out. There's no room for them in the modern game. It's about having this strong identity of, which we've seen modelled in the 100, of, you know, men's and women's part of the same teams, part of the same club. And I think that's very much how it's going to work. Now, I guess there will be, nicknames. The Bears, I've already seen, you know, the Bears stuff put out by Warwickshire to do with the women's tier one successful bid. But yeah, it'll be very much alongside the men's marketing and team and bringing that all under one umbrella. I'm sure that's very much part of the strategy. And it's been the big weakness of the regional system is just a lack of identity, really, for the teams there.
Yeah, and I think if they do have nicknames, if it's the same as the men's team, then I think that's absolutely fine. If anything, that's better because people, I guess, get a little bit more affiliated and comfortable with that new side. I think that's all for Project Darwin. Now, if more stuff comes up, we will mention it. It's quite a big topic to articulate, so I hope we've done a good job of it because there's just so much to go into. And on this Saturday, it will be early afternoon. We don't have a confirmed time. I will be doing a panel with a couple of other journalists and commentators and people like that all about Project Darwin. So I think it might be on Storylines with Melissa and Nikki. So I'll put details on Twitter about that when everything's confirmed, because you'll get insight from current county players and people who can articulate themselves a lot better than us. So you can head over there and listen to that for everything about Project Darwin.
And I see friend of the pod, Dr. Ralph Nicholson, has put out an article in The Guardian to do with Durham's bid. Again, that's worth looking at as well to give a little insight into that Durham-Yorkshire story that's going on.
Indeed. I actually got an exclusive interview with Ellie Threlkeld this morning about Project Darwin uni project. So I know all the inside gossip from that 30-second interview. But anyway, we're going to do a little bit of a season preview because, rest in peace, the Regions. We've got one last year. We've got a treasure this year. So coming up this weekend, we've got Central Sparks against the Blaze at Edgbaston using the big Warwickshire venue. Then we're going to Durham. We've got Northern Diamonds against Thunder at Chesterley Street.
Then, at home.
Yeah. At home, indeed. Then Beckenham. Poor Beckenham. It's going to be bid farewell to Beckenham soon. But we've got Southeast Stars against the Southern Vipers. And then it's a see you later to Sapphire Gardens, because we've got Western Storm versus Sunrisers. So I think that they are very good fixtures to start with, because I know people kind of say they're somewhat local rivals. None of these are actually local, but you've got the Roses Derby, which kind of is Roses, but it's not really Roses. And that won't happen. That is a good point, actually, with Tier 1. That won't exist because there's no Yorkshire and Lancashire. It would just be Lancashire.
Two years' time.
Sparks against the Blaze, who... Blaze, of course, were the better team last year, but it's always a good game. Southeast Stars against the Southern Vipers, which to me is a bit of a classic. I think it's always good when they play each other. And then you've got Western Storm versus Sunrisers. Obviously, Sunrisers are like the best team in the world now, but historically haven't been great. And Western Storm had a pretty rubbish season last season. So that would be a really, really good game. So I'm looking forward to that first round of fixtures.
Yes, and so I'm hoping to get to Edgbaston on Saturday to see that game. I'm without you though, Polly. You're up in Manchester, so if people see a sad old man sat on his own, then do come and say hello to me.
Going to be honest, you've probably got a lock to pick from.
Yeah,
so that was a really mean comment. But all I'm saying is, it's true. It's do a survey. It's true.
Yes, and also, if you're thinking, well, I'd really like to know a bit more about the teams and who's playing for who and when the fixtures are and who are the star players, who are the upcoming young players, I can recommend something to you.
Really? Tell me what it is, because I want to know all that information. It'd be really helpful if two people had compiled it all together.
Well, a special souvenir start of the season program. Can we call it a program?
Program, brochure, yeah.
Sticker book.
Whatever you want.
A sticker book with no stickers in it. Which Polly put out last Saturday, which is absolutely amazing. And really, really well done for putting that together. It's been absolutely brilliant. Lots and lots of people have commented how much they've enjoyed it. And I think Polly's made it available as a PDF. So if you want to take a PDF to your local printer shop, and say, can you turn this into a glossy brochure for me? I think they will, for about 50 quid or something.
Yeah, if someone wants to make me one, that would be great. Thank you.
But otherwise, yeah, for Gen Z, you can just watch it on your phone.
Watch it? You can watch a book.
Look at it. Read it on your phone or whatever.
Right. It's like watching a podcast. Don't watch a podcast, you listen to it. Then also, before next week, actually, we've got another round of fixtures. So Northern Diamonds are away to Western Storm at Headingley. Does no one find that funny? Okay. Just me. No, actually, this is my favourite fixture coming up. We've got... I can't stop laughing. I love women's cricket. I just like to take the mix sometimes. Southern Vipers against Central Sparks. But it's an away fixture for Central Sparks, but it's actually at one of their old home grounds. It's at Wormsley. So I don't know what's going on there, because I'm pretty sure, even though it's in the Vipers region, I'm sure that's a home ground for Central Sparks.
Well, someone who was geographically challenged put the fixtures together last season, and they've corrected it this year.
Geographically challenged. Wow. Then we've got the Blaze against South East Stars at Leicester, and then the big one, Thunder versus Sunrisers at Emirates Old Trafford, and I'm on commentary, so maybe don't tune in for that one.
So yeah, onto YouTube and see and hear Polly on commentary.
Yeah, I know. I love Lancashire so much. The only thing I don't like is when I'm on commentary, I have to wear nice clothes, I have to look nice, well, I have to try to look nice and presentable, because they have cameras in the commentary thing. Which, you know, I'm here for it, because good quality, but also means I have to put more effort in. We're going to try and be serious with our predictions. Who is going to win the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy 2024?
I think it's got to be the Vipers. I can't see beyond the Vipers.
To be fair, I was going to say the exact same. I think 20 over, I'm going to... Oh, I don't know. Oh, don't do this to me. Or maybe 50 overall. I was going to go the Vipers, but I also want to be wild and say the Sunrisers. Like, I don't want to put a curse on it or anything, because I actually want them to win it. But, right, because my theory is, so for Charlotte Edwards Cup, I was thinking, do you know what? I'm going to back Lancashire Thunder to win. I can't see them winning the 50 over. And that's just the reality of it. But I can see Sunrisers winning the 50 over more than I can see them winning the 20 over, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know how realistic it is, because at the end of the day, Vipers are probably going to win everything. But I don't want to say that, because, no.
I think Thunder have got a really good chance in the 20 over. Historically, they've just been inconsistent. But if they can address that, they've made some good overseas signings. Their players are developing nicely. They've got everything in place there. I'd love it. I'd love it if they won the Charlotte Edwards Cup.
Yeah, I saw Katie Mack in the Nets today. I just say new overseas signings. And yeah, I guess it'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, so my tips are Vipers for the Rachel Hayhoe-Flint Trophy and Thunder for the Charlotte Edwards Cup.
We're also joined by a guest this week. We've got Daisy Mullen from Tier 1 side, Lancashire Thunder. I presume they're going to... I don't know if they're going to say Lancashire Thunder or just go Lancashire, because the men are Lancashire Lightning. Anyway, that's a whole other caveat, and we should have probably got into that before. But anyway, we're joined by Daisy Mullen to chat ahead of the season, a season which could be huge for Thunder. So enjoy our chat with Daisy. Tell us a bit about Dubai and Bangalore. What was that experience like going on pre-season tour? I know Lancs have obviously been on pre-season tours a couple of times, but it must have been a pretty cool experience, particularly playing in India.
Yeah, it's been pretty special. It has been the last three times we've gone. This is the third time going, but yeah, just Dubai for 5 or so days. Amazing facilities there, but I think Bangalore was pretty special. Never been there before, neither had a lot of the girls as well. It's a bit calmer than Mumbai. But yeah, the facilities are amazing. It was fantastic and really enjoyed it.
Tell me a little bit, how are the pitches out there? How do they differ from playing in Manchester, playing in Bangalore?
A little bit more tricky, bit of bounce, actually, the ones in Bangalore, a bit of turn. Not so much as it was last year in Mumbai and at the start of the year as well. Yeah, quite true. Wickets are really good facilities to play on. But yeah, a bit of turn there and a bit of bounce. But yeah, it was really good.
And how did you find the opposition? Because I commentated on the T20. It was when you absolutely thrashed the opposition and then played in like another 8-over game after. But it felt like the ODI, well, the ODI, the 50-over game was a little bit more balanced. Did you kind of find that?
Yeah, the opposition were really good. I mean, they imposed a lot of challenges. I think T20-wise, they struggled a little bit. It looks like they were quite more of a composed team rather than an attacking team. So I think in the 45 over, 50 over fixtures, they proved to be quite tricky to get out once because they could hold their wicket quite well. But yeah, they were really good.
Brilliant. So tell us a little bit about your background, your cricket story, how you managed to get into cricket in the first place.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to quite a lot of the girls, I think. I played football at first from the age of six and didn't really play any cricket, only at school. And it was year six, I think, we were playing like the, you know, like the blue bat quick cricket. And my PE teacher, Mr. Foley, was adamant that I should go head down to the local club at Bradshaw. And my dad wasn't too keen at first, quite an expensive sport to get into a little bit. But managed to persuade him. I snuck down a couple of times to a couple of training sessions and then, yeah, got into the Lancet up within the first 6 months and it's been like that ever since.
So cricket wasn't particularly within your family. It was the influence of your primary school teacher, really.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, my dad knew about cricket. We had a cricket bat in the garden. I wouldn't say it was the favourite sport in the family. We were quite footballers, but yeah, I just happened to really enjoy it at primary. And I think there's more of a buzz when you do well in cricket than more so in football. So I think that's why it latched on a little bit.
And did you play football to quite a serious level as well?
Not hugely serious. Did County, Greater Manchester, I played for was probably the highest ranking, and Bury Women's as well. And started off playing for boys as well up until 13. But yeah, kind of halted there, a bit too small to be a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, the big question is, who do you support in football?
Bolton Wanderers is the team of supporters since I was little. But I am a Premier League United fan as well. My dad supports United, so I do favour them as well.
We're Preston North End.
Not good.
So I guess...
Not ideal.
Yeah, for most of the years of my life, I'd say Bolton have been that little bit above Preston all the time. And then in the last few years, they've been below us, which has been quite nice. But you're not...
Yes.
We're not proper rivals, so that's the problem. Mm. Is
no, it's not quite like Blackpool for yous or...
Exactly.
Wigan for us.
So, yeah, as you say, you got into cricket through school and things like that. Did you have any role models growing up, particularly in the women's game? Did you know the women's game really existed?
Not hugely. When I was obviously 10 or 11 going into cricket, I had not a Scooby. I didn't know. Like, some of the girls nowadays are talking like of X, Y and Z players and older players and stuff, and I didn't have a clue. But I think as soon as I started playing and getting to know the women's game a bit more, I'd say definitely the likes of who I'm playing around with now, like Kate Cross and Alex Hartley, were definitely people I looked up to. And thought it could be possible. They were travelling around the world at that time. And I was like, oh, it's pretty cool.
So at what point did you realise that cricket is something that could actually be your profession, that could be something that you actually do for a living?
Yeah, I think it was when the first regional setup kind of began, like 3 or 4 years ago. It definitely seemed more reachable. I'm quite harsh on myself sometimes, where like before that it was kind of like it felt a million miles away, whereas now it obviously is becoming a little bit more of a reality that I could do this for a career for the next 10 or so years.
Yeah, and are you studying at the moment alongside playing cricket?
I was last year. I was at university at Salford, but just recently in September I just withdrew from university to focus full time on cricket, especially with the new tier system coming through and the 100's quite competitive to get into. So yeah, I've decided to put a bit more focus on that.
And I guess what did that professional contract do for you in terms of, I presume it means you get better access to everything, you train a lot more often. What difference did that make for you?
I think we're quite lucky at Lancashire where it didn't make too much of a difference hugely, as we were all quite equal in that sense. But I think it made a difference to myself personally and how I behave, like more disciplined. And I think this year I've definitely noticed that over the winter, definitely working on making myself the best athlete I can be. But yeah, at the start I did struggle a little bit to adapt on that change because I'm still quite young and can be a bit silly sometimes. But yeah, definitely seeing what difference that is now.
Now, the 100 draft has just happened, of course, and I didn't see your name come up on it. What... but there's still a couple of wild card places. Is that something you're hopeful to get into later in the summer?
Yeah, it's not the be all and end all huge aim, but obviously that's something I'd like to strive for. I think I got a little taste of the 100 year past, just gone, and I know that that's reachable, and I know that I can make that again. But yeah, I think the initial aim so far is getting into the Thunder team more often and into the first team, getting a more of a secure spot, and hopefully hand in hand I'll get picked up somewhere, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? If you put in some cracking performances in the early part of the season, then you're going to be quite difficult to ignore, aren't you, when those wildcard places come up. Is there, do you know, or I don't know if you know this, I certainly don't know it, are there any plans when the 100's on? Because now I guess there are going to be a number of professional contracted players who don't make the cut for the 100. Are there plans to give them access to cricket during that month when the 100's on, or are you just going to be sort of sat around waiting for cricket to restart again in the middle of the summer?
Yeah, I think there'll be a bit more this year, a bit more of a organised way of doing it. I think in previous years we've done a lot of in that month block. It's been really good as well, but we as a region, we've done little things like practicing against boys teams at Lancs age groups and other like second team comps and stuff. But I think now that there's more of a professionalised game and there's more left out, not left out, but more left back at home, I think this year it should be really, really beneficial each year.
We're pretty excited about Thunder this year because you've got new head coach, and I mean, last season, the Charlotte Edwards Cup eliminator, so, so close to silverware. What do you think are going to be the things that Thunder need to do right to get your hands on silverware finally?
Yeah, Chris Reid has been really great. Obviously, it was a bit of a shock to see Shawsey go, but he's built a really good foundation for Chris to like push on with. But yeah, he's kind of brought in a mentality straight away that we should be shocked and surprised when we don't win, rather than accepting that. So yeah, the environment's like been in a really good place, and I think having that taste of almost silverware last year has definitely been a strive for this year to go bigger and better and make two finals and win more games.
Yeah, I'm old enough to have seen Chris Reid play cricket for England. And I saw him at a very, very very famous occasion in 1999, which is before you were born, Daisy. But he was playing for England against New Zealand at Lord's. And New Zealand had this bowler, Chris Cairns, who came in to bowl it. And he bowled a slower ball and he tossed it up quite high. And Chris Reid thought it was a beamer coming straight at his head. So he ducks down and it was actually the slower ball. And it just dropped at his feet and bowled him. And it feel his England career never really, having been quite a promising player, it never really kicked on from there. So maybe don't mention that to anyone, Daisy. But that's one time I saw him play. Look it up on YouTube at some point. It's quite comical.
Yeah, I might ask him about that next on Thursday.
Bring your old man story back.
Oh, yes.
Well, to kind of wrap up, what are some of your goals in terms of cricket or outside of cricket? Do you want to have another career alongside cricket, or is, you know, playing for England your ambition?
Yeah, I think playing for England's obviously the ambition. I think it is most girls my age as well. I don't think you'd be playing cricket if that wasn't a dream. Yeah, alongside cricket, I'm not too sure. Obviously, initially it was to be doing my sports science degree and looking down that path into healthcare and stuff I'm quite interested in, but cricket only comes around once, so I think cricket's the ambition so far, and see how far I can get with that.
And if you've got any listeners who are thinking of dropping out of university or anything like that, can we say we don't recommend that, and I'm sure Daisy's going to go back and finish her degree at some point.
Yes, that is the plan. Definitely is the plan. So if you can do both, that's better.
I've threatened to drop out of uni about 10 times this year. So, you know, I think
that's... Don't do it.
Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been really interesting to speak to you, and we're very excited for Thunder this season, as we say.
So, come on, Thunder. Yeah.
Yes, fingers crossed. Should be a good season, hopefully.
I am so excited for this season. It is now reaching fever pitch. I cannot wait for Saturday to happen.
Do you know, we say this every year, but we're like, oh, I can't believe it's the start of the season already. And then September, I can't believe it's the end of the season. But it's also true. Like, how's it crept up on us so fast? It was pouring down with rain earlier. There's no, what that means.
I had to scrape the car this morning because it had frost on it.
No. Oh, gosh. Do you know, there's been some lovely days of proper cricket weather. Now it's just, as the season approaches, it's just turning into miserable winter. No, that's absolutely fine. It's classic. One thing before we go that I wanted to mention, because it's something I feel like I need to tell the world, is that next year we are both running the Manchester Marathon. Oh, my day. Some stupid person, me, signed up for it because I'm the most easily influenced person on the planet and had a conversation with someone about it for about 5 minutes. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do it. So,
and so because Polly did it, I just thought I need to sign up as well. Of course, I've done a marathon before, so I know what I'm signing up for. And I'm doing a half marathon actually, first weekend in May. People who want to see me on the streets of Birmingham, but yeah, very excited about that. Over a year to go yet, but really looking forward to that'll be start of the cricket season in 2025. The new count, we can launch the new counties with a marathon run.
But yeah, I just thought I'd let everyone know because I think it's quite funny because it's so ridiculous and mad, but why not? Anyway, we will be back next week. Enjoy the first week of the cricket season. I hope there's crazy stuff. I hope someone gets a sixer. I hope there's a century. I've got high hopes. And my ultimate wish is that there aren't games rained off. But this world isn't perfect and that's not going to happen. But I would love for that to be the case.